Welcome into another edition of NBA Sound System, as always, made possible by the folks at 604 Podcast Network and Millions Co. My name is Gil McGregor, joined as always by Kyle Irving as well. And none of this really is possible without the subscribers. So shout out to y'all for subscribing wherever you get your podcast. Please make sure to share it with a friend. KI. A lot has happened since the last time we talked. It was just a week ago, but a lot has happened. How are you, man?
I'm great. We had a lot of series tied up at 2-2. The Celtics was the only series that was a little bit lopsided, but even those have been some pretty entertaining games. The playoffs have delivered so far, honestly. Like, the stars have delivered, the narratives have delivered, the storylines, all of it. So, you know, I'm excited to break it down a little bit here, and I know we have some other things to talk about: NBA Draft Lottery, NBA Draft Combine. Toronto's got a WNBA team headed its way. Golden State's got a WNBA team headed its way. So we got a lot to cover here.
Yeah. Like, I wasn't kidding. A lot happened. We should start real quick with what's going on in the NBA playoffs, because this is what's going to age the worst. Because by the time you hear this, some of these series very well could be over. We can start tonight. We're recording here on Wednesday, May 15th, and we are about an hour out from Boston Cleveland game 5. The Celtics have an opportunity to get it done in 5 games. The Cavs are very much injured. Jared Allen has not played since the first round. Donovan Mitchell is now out with a calf injury. So that one is where that is right now. I think we're both expecting the Celtics to get that done. That will be followed by Mavs Thunder, a series that is 2-2 right now. These teams are going back and forth. So that one really feels like a toss up. The Nuggets are making me look really dumb. I said that they were done last week. They've won 3 straight. I shouldn't have counted them out as soon as I did. Their one went away from the Western Conference Finals. They will play in Game 6 tomorrow. And then the Pacers and Knicks feels like 2000 again. These teams are setting dirty screens, getting each other's faces. Dante DiVincenzo saying that they're pretty much fake tough guys over in that Indiana locker room. Tyrese Halliburton, don't know which version of him is going to show up depending on the game. He has back-to-back like 30-point games and a big game and a blowout, and he's, you know, talking that talk a little bit, and then he kind of didn't do what needed to be done in Game 5, although Jalen Brunson did with another 40-point performance. So with those 4 series, what can we say about what's transpired in the last 6-7 days?
Yeah, I mean, if we want to start with Celtics-Cavs, obviously the Celtics, you know, do what the Celtics do best, and that is drop Game 2, you know, a game that you would never expect them to lose. But then they find a way to bounce back. They win Game 3 and 4, and then now they're in a position to seal it at home in Game 5. I'd be shocked if they lose that one. Like Gil said, they're going to be playing later on tonight at the time of recording. I just had like a quick little rant to get off my chest about the way that the Celtics have been evaluated. And I wasn't really expecting this to be the way that we were going to start off the show, but it's crazy to me that like the light that this team is talked about in, I understand that is the precedent that you set when you are supposed to be the title favorites, but like they have the best record in the playoffs and they have the best net rating in the playoffs. And Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, all things considered, have played really damn good, especially the way they responded after that Game 2 loss and a lot of pressure started coming onto their shoulders. They both responded really well in Games 3 and 4 to pick up those wins. And the narrative is almost like, well, why didn't they beat the Cavs by more? They didn't have Donovan Mitchell or Jared Allen. It's like, you don't have to cover a spread to win the NBA championship. You just got to win the damn game. And those two players played really well. And the conversation is still like, oh, this is like a really, and I'm not saying the Celtics have played perfect basketball, because they haven't. Like, they've looked lackadaisical at times. I've been saying it for a couple days now to, you know, some of my friends in group chats. Like, I feel like that this Eastern Conference Final series, assuming that they advance, is going to be a really tough wake-up call for them, because both Indiana and New York play tough. They play hard. They play fast. Well, you know, I mean, the Knicks are speeding up the pace to play with the Pacers, but like the Knicks want to make it ugly and they want to play tough, and the Celtics don't always like to get tough. The Pacers want to, you know, go, you know, 110% with their foot through the gas pedal and play as fast as they want. The Celtics don't always want to do that either. So I think it's going to be a wake-up call for either teams. I still think Boston's going to end up representing the East in the finals, and that's going to be a tough wake-up call. But, you know, to me, it's just kind of shocking what the narrative has become around this team when they have the best record in the playoffs, the best net rating in the playoffs. And yes, they haven't played the toughest competition, but hey, this just in. If you try really hard in the regular season, you end up with a 15-game lead over everybody else in the Eastern Conference, you're going to end up with the easiest path to the NBA Finals. This isn't new. So that's kind of the, you know, I mean, I'm getting my blood going already to start off the pod, but that's where I'm at right now, Gil.
when you said you had a rant lined up, I thought it was about Max Strus wearing a Florida Panthers jersey to TD Garden. I thought you were going to tell him to get over it. Like, I mean, like, there's something going on. And it makes a little sense. He played for the Heat. So it makes sense he already has a custom Florida Panthers jersey ready to go. But when you're down 3-1 in the series, you got to let the petty go and just go out and hoop and see what happens, because we can't be do that in game one, man. I don't know, bro. I don't know. I thought that was where the rant was coming, but I get it. I think with the Celtics too, who much is given, much is required. And I'm definitely guilty of holding them to a certain standard and kind of overlooking the fact that they are, what, 7-2, you know, to start the playoffs. And they will most likely, we're expecting them to take care of business and handle business. And I know, you know, they've kind of had some luck with injuries for other teams, but let's not act like Kristaps Porzingis hasn't been out for the entirety of this series. So, you know, they're getting some good minutes from Al Horford, but man, he needs Kristaps back in the lineup ASAP, because my man is, he's not built to be doing these minutes. This is not Atlanta anymore. So that's one thing to keep an eye on as far as that goes. Again, like you said, we can't spend too much time on these series because there's so much that will probably change by the time you hear this. But the one thing I just want to say, I'm really impressed with the Thunder growing up in front of our eyes, the way that they're executing their game plan to kind of limit Luka Doncic, who's dealing with a knee injury of his own, and you know, making Kyrie Irving more of a distributor and making PJ Washington beat you. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, what he was able to do down the stretch of that Game 4 on the road against a team with two proven big time playoff performers to step up. You know, all the guys, Chet Holmgren had big moments, Jalen Williams, J Dub is having big moments for them as well. So I'm really interested to see how that series goes. Would not be surprised if it goes 7 games. And whoever we get in the Western Conference Finals, I'm super amped for how that series is going to go too.
Yeah, I want to mention, actually, you touched on PJ Washington, but how incredible has that trade deadline looked for the Mavericks, bringing in PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford? Like, I had a moment this past weekend. It was the night that PJ Washington hit 7 threes, and I'm like, would the Mavericks even be here without those guys? Like, I don't know if they, even with the way the Clippers kind of looked like they eventually just fizzled out at the end of that first round series, I don't know if the Mavericks would even be in this position in the Western Conference semifinals without the trade deadline acquisitions and PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford. So credit where it's due there. I had the same takeaway. Just that was one of the most, we don't have to spend too much time on it because that series can be over by the end of it, but that was such a gutsy win by the Thunder to come back in the fourth quarter. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander doing what he does best in crunch time. You know, they just look calm, cool, collected, which is, you know, nothing to sneeze at for a team that is the youngest team to ever win a playoff series, you know, never mind two playoff series potentially. So to steal that game in Dallas, to even the series, that completely changes everything going back to Oklahoma City. And then, you know, we talk enough about Jalen Brunson and how great he's been on the show, but I mean, 5 40-point games in one postseason.
More to go, right?
Yeah, it tied him with Shaq and Hakeem Olajuwon for the most in a single postseason NBA playoff history. And now he is 2 shy of Michael Jordan and 3 shy of LeBron James for the most ever in a single play, most 40-point games ever in a single postseason. So, you know, plenty of shout-outs to give around the league. But like you said, I'm really looking forward to that Western Conference Finals as well, especially with the way that the Denver Nuggets have played, the way that Nikola Jokic has responded to once again stamp himself as the head and shoulders, far and away, best player in the world. What he did the other night to make it 3 straight wins and turn that series around for the Nuggets is remarkable. So, you know, I think in both conferences, we're going to end up with really, really strong conference finals. And I think in the East, it's going to be a little bit more chippy and kind of a dogfight. And in the West, it's going to just be a full on, like, my talent versus your talent and whose talent is better. And I'm looking forward to it either way.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, talking about Jokic, and again, the Nuggets is making me look dumb for saying that they are done. My bad, Denver. My bad. but you know, the fact that he's elevated the play of everybody around him. We've had big Aaron Gordon moments. Jamal Murray's figuring it out throughout the calf, despite the calf injury. Which, how many calf injuries are you going to have this postseason? It's pretty wild how that's continuing to happen. Like, even like Pat Connaughton and Luke Kornet don't get talked about that much, but Giannis and Donovan Mitchell now and other guys have been dealing with it too, Kristaps Porzingis. But that's what's been a big takeaway. Like, again, there's nothing that you can do to stop Jokic. He's going against the defensive player of the year, 4-time defensive player of the year, and just really just carving up that Minnesota defense. And one last thing you said, calm, cool, collected for Oklahoma City as a team. And that's a reflection of their best player. Shai, never too high, never too low. He's dropping bars about his whole life being consistent. Like, that's really you know, what he is and what that team is, because they follow him as their leader. And I think, you know, regardless of how the series goes for them and regardless of how the playoffs play out for this Thunder team, this is a team who I'm sure we are all expecting to be back in this moment for the next couple years. And they will look back to games like that comeback in Dallas, and they will look back to series like this and the way they took care of business against New Orleans as steps along the way of their growth to becoming an NBA title contender, a perennial contender. And one last thing, they were the number one seed for a reason. Now, the crazy thing about them being the number one seed is they'll add more talent. They will be picking in this year's draft lottery, which is crazy. Sam Presti is just a genius at what he's done, the way he's built this team, the way he has them set up for the future. When we talk about a lot has happened, we got to talk about the way that the NBA draft lottery played out. Atlanta Hawks, against almost all odds, have the number one pick, and that's another discussion in itself. But a consequence of that means that the Toronto Raptors fell out of the top six, and their lottery pick after this hellish season goes to San Antonio. The Jakob Poeltl trade is finally done. The Raptors won't pick until 19 in this year's draft. And then they have the first pick in the second round. So we should first talk about the lottery, and it's clear who the winners and losers were, but I don't know what your big takeaways from that is now that the Atlanta Hawks are on the clock.
I think one of the biggest takeaways is that chaos is the biggest winner. Like, Atlanta as a team that already had, you know, reportedly had both of their star guards on the trading block in Trae Young and DeJounte Murray, now also have a number one pick in the mix where, you know, if Alexander Sarr is the pick, which it seems like he will be if they make a pick, that means Clint Capella could also be on the trade block. So that adds a little bit of chaos in Atlanta. And then, you know, of course, unfortunately for Raptors fans, but I think fortunately for NBA fans and people who want to see Wemby competing on a bigger stage as soon as possible, you know, it's obviously tough. The Raptors had to surrender that number six overall pick with it being top six protected and it falling to number eight. But, you know, I mean, that makes for a really, really interesting offseason in San Antonio where, you know, on top of having the number four overall pick, now they also have the number eight overall pick, and they can kind of, you know, mix and match their young players that, you know, they're willing to make available and those two top 10 picks. Even in a lesser draft, I still think that they could, you know, package a young player in one of those top 10 picks for a solid role player who can make an instant contribution to, you know, getting to potentially even the play-in tournament range as soon as next season. You know, and then again, with it being a lesser draft, I don't think that they would hesitate with parting ways with either of those top 10 picks or both of those top 10 picks, I should say, to acquire potentially a star that could help, you know, pair with Victor Wembanyama. Now, you know, I mean, you and I have talked about it on this pod before. Like, if we're going to throw some random trades off the wall, like, is Atlanta potentially considering hitting the full rebuild? Would they take on both of those first round picks, maybe a young player, and move someone like Trae Young to San Antonio, who would be the perfect fit for the Spurs as one of the best passers in the NBA, who obviously has some shortcomings that he cannot overcome on the defensive end because of his stature, but Wemby makes up for all of that. I mean, honestly, all of that. So, you know, you would almost not even realize that Trae Young is a liability defensively because Wemby is protecting him in the back line there. So, you know, I think that as much as teams like the Pistons, who finished with the worst record in the NBA and then fell to the number five overall pick for the second year in a row, unfortunately for them, unfortunately for teams like the Raptors that lost their first round pick, it's also like super beneficial to just the casual NBA fan who doesn't really have a specific team, because I think it's just going to instill chaos in a draft that was already going to be chaotic in the first place, because there is really no structure in place in terms of like who the top prospects are, and there's no consensus. It, you know, things can go anywhere. So I'm excited to see what direction that it does go in.
Yeah, no, and for the sake of those who might not know, top four, order of the top four in this draft, Atlanta picking first, Washington stayed in second, so they're pretty much the only team that didn't go up or fall down. Houston picks third, and that pick is from the Brooklyn Nets. The Spurs will pick fourth, and then Detroit for the second straight year, worst record in the league in the year that they had a historic losing streak. They fall to five. That's really unfortunate. I think the biggest thing about Toronto that added insult to injury is that at the lottery, Scotty Barnes, they ask him, yeah, man, like, yo, what do you want to say about this guy that you're going to add? She's like, oh, you know, we're building something special in Toronto. Can't wait to have him. And, you know, we're doing some big things, all this stuff. the pick doesn't exist. So maybe he was talking to whoever the Raptors will take at 19th, and that's something that we will talk about as we get closer to the NBA draft and evaluate a few more prospects. But it's time for my rant. When we talk about evaluating prospects, and I'm echoing a lot of what our guy Steph Noh said over at the Sporting News, people are being weird about Bronny James. Like, he is at the draft combine for good reason. This is a guy who had a life-altering cardiac event less than a year ago, was able to get back on the basketball court, do what he does, and play, you know, not necessarily numbers-wise, but playing in the Pac-12 is playing at a high level to play the minutes that he played and to be impactful. Had double-digit scoring game, I think of 16 against Oregon State. Again, in a Pac-12 environment, that's no small feat. And if anybody could do it, they would do it. And that's whatever. He gets to the combine, I think he measures a shade under 6'2", about a 6 foot seven and a half, 6'8" wingspan. People are freaking out about him, you know, being listed at 6'4" on USC's roster, where it looks like USC just lies a little bit about everybody's heights on their roster. But I say all that to say, Bronny is exactly where he's supposed to be. He is, you know, one of the however many guys, one of the 100, 120 best prospects that get invited to the combine to go through these tests to evaluate what he can be and the type of player that he can be at the next level. You've said it before. I know you have him on your big board, not necessarily projected as a first round pick, but this is a guy who in a draft class like this one is one of the best 58 players, however many guys are going to get drafted. So that's my take on that. There's a lot going on with Bronny. He's also self-aware. He compared himself, you know, to guys, you know, wants to have an impact, you know, like a Derek White, you know, which is, you know, not, it seems ambitious, but also like he understands, you know, the type of player that he wants to be at the next level. So that's my spiel about Bronny James, and it's good to see him on the floor, and I'm excited to see. And you've seen him play in high school, you've seen him play in college, so there are very few that are as qualified to talk about him as a professional prospect than you.
Yeah, I mean, I would have a similar rant that you just had because, I mean, but you kind of took it away for me because I think another one of the biggest things, a lot of people are like, well, he only averaged like 5 points per game at USC. What's he even doing at the NBA draft combine? He doesn't belong there. He shouldn't be a second round pick, all this stuff. This isn't like the NBA All-Star game where like fans vote who starts. Like, this is NBA executives and decision makers get together and they compile a list of players that they most want to see participate in the combine to get a closer look at players that they could potentially draft. This isn't like, you know, the fans that are like, oh, it'd be really cool to see Bronny out there. Like, it's like some like make a wish. Like, no, this is, you know, NBA executives are like, this kid has potential. I want to see this kid perform. I want to see him go through the combine, go through all the drills, see how he, you know, fares in these scrimmages. And yeah, he had a tough scrimmage the first day, but I just wrote about it over on sportingnews.com. You can check it out from his day two scrimmage. And Bronny played really well today. Honestly, he was one of the best players on the floor in his second scrimmage. So, you know, he's capable of doing these things. He's a high level defender. He's a very, very solid athlete. He is not, this just in, he's not the level of athlete that his dad is, because his dad is literally possibly the best athlete in the history of the world. Like, this guy, you cannot mimic that athleticism. So you can't expect him to be that athletic, but he is a good athlete. He's a very solid shooter. He's a great decision maker. He's an elite defender. And he's someone that just plays the right way and makes the right reads and makes the right plays. You know, I know, and you're going to pick this up from conversations that we have throughout the process. Gil and I are two of the biggest believers still of Bronny James, even though the year that he had this past year at USC. But, you know, that's not just because we're both, you know, LeBron James fans and guys that want to see Bronny succeed. It's also because that's actually genuinely what I believe. Like, this is a kid who has the potential to succeed at the NBA level because he has a high basketball IQ. Like you said, he understands his role. He knows the ways that he can make contributions at the NBA level. And he even said it in his post-combine scrimmage interview today. He was like, you know, I play hard on the defensive end because I understand that's where my minutes are going to come from. And it might not come from right away. It's not like he's going to be someone that is starting or even in a rotation from day one, but you know, kind of like those guys, not really Drew Holiday, but kind of like those guys like Derek White, who it took him a little bit of time to find his role in the NBA and figure out, okay, where can I get playing time? He started getting playing time in San Antonio because he was really good on the defensive end, active hands, made the right reads as a ball handler, could slash and score at the hoop. And then he comes to Boston and he becomes this lights out knockdown shooter. Like, I'm not saying that Bronny James is going to become Derek White, but I will say Bronny James might have read my scouting report because I used Derek White as my player comparison going into his freshman season. No, I'm just kidding. But I do feel like, you know, that is kind of the blueprint that he could mimic in terms of finding a pathway to succeeding and sticking in the NBA. So you know, for all the noise that he doesn't belong at the combine, he doesn't belong in this, he doesn't belong in that, you know, he's proving right now that he does belong in these events, that he can fit in with these other NBA draft prospects. And I completely agree with you. He is, in my opinion, I will say 100% worth using one of the 58 draft picks in the 2024 NBA draft this year. And part of that is because it's not a very strong draft class that is going to have a lot of roll of the dice anyway. But the other part of that is because I just genuinely believe that when it comes to projecting how he could be as an NBA player down the line, he is one of the best 58 players in this class.
No, 100%. And you hit the nail on the head and saying that, listen, if he wasn't that good, you and I would not be shy about saying it. Like, you were probably gave the most honest assessment I think anybody's given about Bronny James when you saw his last high school game, saying he needed to step up and do this and do that and be that for his team. And he didn't. And that's not necessarily the player that he is, but the type of player that he is a connector type guy at the next level. We see it when he's playing with other high level players. And when you're in the NBA, newsflash, you're going to play with really good basketball players. And two things you talked about. One, he's the son of one of the greatest athletes ever, maybe the greatest the earth has ever seen. And on top of that, he has one of the best basketball minds ever as well. So not only does he pick up some of that just genetically, but also he learns a lot. And that's probably why he's so self-aware and compares himself to a Derek White or a Drew Holiday or a Davion Mitchell. You can't turn on TV and not see what Deuce McBride is doing, you know, for the New York Knicks and think, okay, there is an archetype for this type of player on a winning team. And he plays winning basketball. And it certainly, means that I think a team is going to take that chance.
And I do want to say one more thing too, like, a lot of this pre-draft process, and I did have the privilege of going to the NBA draft combine in 2022, and I got to sit in on some of the private workouts that teams were having because they have them in the same court. And anybody, you know, the media members and executives and stuff that are there, they can just stick around and watch these, you know, whether it's Clutch Sports or WME or, you know, whatever agency is hosting these workouts. And these players are going toe-to-toe with some of the other top prospects. But a lot of times it can be one-on-zero where it is just, you know, you in the basket, and you're shooting against nobody, and you are just kind of flashing your explosive athleticism and how hard you can run and your chiseled frame, all these things. Like, that is an area where Bronny is going to thrive. And that makes a massive difference when it comes to, you know, you're having these interviews with these teams, and they just saw this workout where he's, you know, dunking with force in the open court. He's knocking down open shots because he has a clean, smooth jump shot. Like, those are the types of things that teams are going to be looking at and going, okay, yeah, we could probably develop this guy into something. We could probably develop him into a rotation player. So, you know, it goes beyond like the public opinion of this player and what they're saying about him on First Take and all these shows. Like, it really is what's happening in the gym. And he's already proved at the combine that he belongs, but I really do feel like he's someone that when it comes to these individual workouts and these smaller, like, you know, closed workouts where it's very specific teams that are specifically interested in those players that are working out, that are attending, I think he's going to shine even more. And that's why I'm very confident that he's going to end up getting drafted in the 2024 NBA draft.
And one last thing on that, he's 19 years old, and I've been 19 before, you've been 19 before, a lot of you listening has been 19 before. He's probably not done growing. 19-year-olds grow. He's about to be 20 in the fall, but he could not be done growing. So you can think about the measurables or whatever, but one measurable that probably is only going to get better, he had a 40-inch vertical leap, and that is something that is definitely high-level athleticism. Speaking of growth, KI alluded to at the beginning of the show, the WNBA is growing, so we'll take a quick break, and we will talk about that because it specifically impacts the Toronto sports sphere because, they're adding a team. All right, so after throwing it to the break in possibly the most awkward way I could by talking about the Toronto sports sphere, we should talk about the actual news. First of all, the WNBA is expanding in 2025 with the Golden State Valkyries. Cool color scheme. They are knocking out their branding. First video narrated by Kehlani. They got the Warriors players wearing the gear. Bay Area is ready for WNBA basketball. Not officially announced yet, but all reports and signs indicate that in 2026, Toronto will be adding its own WNBA team. So the W will be up to 14 teams. Canada already has a huge presence in the W. Talk about Kia Nurse, Natalie Achonwa. Talk about, you know, now Aaliyah Edwards, top six pick in this year's draft. So the growth of women's basketball in Canada will continue. Huge news. It's exciting. That'll give us more to talk about. And my thing, I'm just saying, we're talking about the draft. Team probably not going to be that good in 2026, 2027 draft. Juju Watkins coming out of USC wouldn't be a bad franchise player for franchise to be named later. And social media has had plenty of theories about what they think this name could be. I don't know if you've seen any of them, if you've latched on any of them. I saw the Huskies. That was the men's team. The first ever NBA game was played in Toronto. They were the Huskies. Maybe they should have their own identity. I saw the smoke. Now duck in the smoke. The city's called the Big Smoke. I don't know. I feel like I'm not qualified enough to completely get into it, but I do think that based on Golden State's rollout, they set the bar pretty high.
Yeah, they did. I also thought it was hilarious that Paige Beckers unironically like was like, oh, this color scheme's pretty dope. Or she like said, she commented something. It's like, yeah. Well, yeah, you're probably going to be playing for them next year. So yeah, true. I hope you like the color scheme and the logo and the team name and all of that. But no, kind of like you said, I mean, you know, there are definitely people out there that are more qualified than you and I to discuss what a, you know, Toronto WNBA team could be named. I saw, obviously, like people are going to go to, and I got the ball in the background, but like the Owls at the Six, something like that. I'm like, I don't know if that's the route that you want to go. I don't know if you really want to tie the whole franchise to that brand. You know, I mean, beyond that, I did see the Huskies as well, but it almost feels like they should kind of like identify their own path there and yeah. Go in a completely different direction. You know, I was thinking maybe like the W Raptors. I don't know if you know, we're kind of thinking the same. I'm just kidding. I don't know if anybody saw that on the Bill Simmons pod the other day. They were like, they should just name all the WNBA teams the W and then whatever their NBA team is. It's like, what are we doing?
No, that can't be a
conversation. But I don't know what direction they're going to go in. But you know what I mean? I feel like Toronto is kind of a city that, like, no matter what brand they go with, it kind of ends up having like a cool ring to it and kind of a swag to it. Like, even like when it comes down to like the Blue Jays and Maple Leafs, like all the jerseys are clean, all the merch is clean. Like I have a good feeling about it the same way that, you know, the Golden State Warriors kind of, the Golden State Valkyries came out and did their thing with that. I see, you know, maybe it should be the W Warriors. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I don't know what the team name is going to be, but I'm looking forward to seeing basketball in Toronto, because every single time that they've had those WNBA games up in Canada, the preseason games, they sell out every single time. Mm-hmm. So you know the support is there. The league is growing. They're expanding because the money's going to be coming in. The attention that, you know, all the new stars are bringing to the league. And I talked about it a little bit on the pod last week, but you know, I'm excited to be a new W fan. So I'm still very new to all this, but I'm getting into it this season. I've already, you know, I watched more games last night than I did all last season. So we're tapped in.
Yeah, I was going to say, just like the Raptors now, this is going to be Canada's team. And it's going to be a cool thing to do in the summer across the country. And also going on in the summer gives young girls and young fans, male and female, opportunities to come across from wherever, because you're not in school, most likely. You can come watch the game. So I'm excited to see the level of support and the way that they kind of rally around this new team, which will probably be competitive really soon. I think the other question was going to be, what color scheme could they go for? They could go purple and red, they can go black and gold, they can go blue and red. They have a lot of options, so that'll be pretty cool. One more conspiracy thing. I don't know if you saw the first look at Sabrina Ionescu's next signature shoe. She's from the Bay. I don't know. Did you see what colors they were?
I did see what colors they were. And I saw the silhouette too. We could have a whole conversation about that shoe if you'd like to.
I'm just saying they would match those new uniforms out in their home area too. But, you know, that's maybe another conversation for another offseason and another time. But we are talking about team building, team moves, star movement. And, you know, we talked about teams that went fishing last week. And after we talked about it, a couple of days later, the Suns fired Frank Vogel. And then about 24 hours later, they hired Mike Budenholzer to be the next head coach. And that's just kind of like the tip of the iceberg of a bunch of stuff that's happening this offseason with the teams that did not advance in the postseason. The Lakers coaching search continues. I don't know where you stand on J.J. Redick seeming like a favorite to get that job. They're also going to interview James Borrego, Sam Cassell, Chris Quinn from Miami as well. So there's that. Where do we start on the coaching thing? And I guess, how much blame do you think those respective coaches deserved for what did or did not happen with their teams this past year?
I do want to start with the Lakers coaching search, and I tweeted this, but I really just think that Steve Nash should personally call J.J. Redick and tell him, this is a trap. Do not take that Lakers job, because unless you win the championship, there is almost no way that you are coming out of this looking like you succeeded in this role. And I really like J.J. Redick. I've been listening to Mind the Game every single week that it's out. That is free game for NBA fans to listen into two brilliant basketball minds like him and LeBron James. I'm a huge fan of the Old Man and the Three podcast and the guests that he brings on and the way that he interacts with them. I really am. I went from being his biggest hater when I was younger because I was a Maryland fan. He was always killing the Terps, to, you know, one of his biggest supporters to him in the media space. and just how talented he is in that, you know, in that realm. But to be the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, as we saw with Darvin Ham, that's a crazy amount of pressure, especially for his first head coaching job. And the way that he is, you know, the same age as the older guys on the, I mean, well, basically just LeBron James, but you know, I mean, it just feels like he's more of a peer than he is like kind of a leader figure. And I wonder how the team would respond to that, especially with the pod with LeBron and how he's kind of buddy buddy with him. And you know, is he just an extension of LeBron James? Like, he would never be able to escape those accusations the way that other coaches in LeBron's past were assumed to be a puppet of LeBron. So it's like, would you really want to start your NBA coaching career in that spot? It feels like it's a really, really tough challenge. I do think that he is capable of taking on that challenge and potentially succeeding in that challenge. It's just a lot of pressure is put on that Lakers head coaching job. And no matter how good he is with the X's and the O's, it really is just going to come down to, did you win a championship or did you not? Because that is the timeline that they are on right now. So, you know, to kind of tie a bow on that, like, I don't think JJ Redick would be a bad head coaching hire. I think, you know, in the pool of candidates that he's been pooled with so far, like, he would be a great candidate for the job. I just think that, like, for me, I really like the idea of him, like, when he first came out as a potential head coach for that Hornets opening. Like, I like that fit because it's a younger team. And I think they would listen to him and kind of buy into what he has to say and respect his basketball mind. And I'm not saying the Lakers wouldn't. I just think that, like, the spotlight is so different. And I do think that the Hornets made a great hire, obviously, with Charles Lee, Celtics assistant coach. But, you know, I feel like JJ Redick, with his first head coaching job in the NBA, to take on a star-driven team and a spotlight-driven team like the Lakers is very similar to be set up for failure in the same way that Steve Nash going to the Brooklyn Nets with KD, Kyrie, and James Harden was.
Yeah, no, that Steve Nash Brooklyn Nets situation was a rough one. And people kind of talked about it and he kind of jumped straight from there. And I think back to like Jason Kidd going straight from the court to coaching, and he's kind of figured it out, you know, as he's gone. Chauncey Billups made the weird leap from the studio to the sideline as well. I know I heard on TV, it might have been First Take or some show like that, when they were talking about, you know, it being kind of unprecedented. And I think that it's really important to talk about the difference in eras, because this is kind of how Pat Riley got his start, right? He was, you know, a Lakers TV guy, got brought on to their coaching staff, and then just kind of assumed the head coaching role, and then became one of the greatest coaches and executives that the NBA has ever seen. But, you know, again, that happened in the late 70s, early 80s. It's a very different time, and it's kind of hard to envision it happening. But the fact that he is mentioned in this job race, and I think the LeBron thing does have gives him a leg up a little bit. I'd be interested to see what happens with Ty Lue and the Clippers. I don't think those ties will be severed. I think that obviously there's some contractual stuff there, but they wanted to get him in the first place. I remember there was like that whole internet sleuthing with the birthday cake with the Lakers logo on, and then he ended up pivoting and some negotiation stuff happened, whatever the case may be. But that coaching hire will be one to definitely keep an eye on. Now, the other part about things that are going on and the noise is starting to get louder and louder. Three names that I'll throw out there. You know, we talked about Donovan Mitchell and the Cavaliers on the brink of elimination as we record this. We talked about Trae Young and potentially being out with the Hawks getting the number one pick. And another one, most think that Brandon Ingram has probably played his last game in a Pelicans uniform. So I said those three names. Those are all, you know, young stars in the NBA. They've all, you know, garnered some pretty impressive accomplishments up to this point in their respective careers. Of the three, do you think that one's most likely to be gone? How do you see it playing out? Do you think one of those three guys are going to be the biggest names to move this summer? Do you think it might be somebody else? But those are very intriguing trade pieces, potentially, of guys who could be on the move this offseason. Also, you know, in Cleveland, I think everything might fall apart because Jared Allen might be on the way out as well. So,
yeah, I think that it in my brain right now, and I don't know if you feel the same way, like, and maybe it's just because we just saw them eliminated from the playoffs and then the other end it's Wemby, but like, I'm seeing these stars become available and my brain immediately goes to, how do they fit with the Spurs? And then the other one is, how do they fit with the Magic? Because like, the Magic really felt like they were one true sharpshooter scoring piece away from like being a team that won a playoff series this year. And then obviously, you know, Wemby and the Spurs speaks for itself. It's, you know, he's going to be carrying that team to the playoffs sooner rather than later. And who's going to be along for the ride with him is really intriguing to me. I do kind of feel like Brandon Ingram is probably the most likely to be moved out of that trio. Just because I do think the Pelicans like what they have coming up in Trey Murphy and Herb Jones, and they feel like they could probably replace his production with the combination of those two guys. Trey Young, I'm still not 100% sold that he's going to be gone from Atlanta. Like, I know those are the trade rumors, but we've seen it before. I mean, if he wants out of Atlanta, then, you know, I think they might do right by him. And I don't think they would hesitate to hit the reset button, because as we've seen since that, you know, one run to the Eastern Conference Finals, it doesn't feel like they have what it takes in that duo to get over the top and be a contender in the East, especially with teams like Boston. And then you look at Donovan Mitchell and the Cavs, and that's a really intriguing one as well, because he's obviously still got it. He's still the type of player that can single-handedly win you a playoff game, as we saw. He's been incredible this postseason when he was healthy. Obviously, the calf injury is tough, and that's probably going to be, you know, the kiss of death for Cleveland's season. But, you know, he would be another one who, to me, is very intriguing for either of those two teams that I just mentioned, whether it's San Antonio or Orlando. But, you know, he's also the type of star who I do feel like he fits in a lot of different places, because even though he's pretty ball dominant and can score, like, I don't know, he's someone to me that just feels like he's an easier star to play with. He doesn't always command the ball to be successful. And, you know, I mean, he's not a lockdown defender by any means, but he's not a sieve on that end of the floor either. So, you know, he's someone that can kind of slot at the one or two. He's kind of a combo guard-ish. I know he's more naturally a two guard, but he can also play with the ball in his hands as a one. And just his history of how good he's been in the playoffs is the type of player that any franchise could convince themselves to go out and, you know, dump a decent amount of assets to go get a player like that. So if I were to rank them in order of the stars that I am most excited to see potentially get traded, it would go Donovan Mitchell, then Trae Young, then Brandon Ingram. But if we're going the other way around and it's who is most likely to get moved, I would probably go Brandon Ingram, then Trae Young, then Donovan Mitchell.
That makes sense. You know, I would say the one thing that lets us know that these chalks have already gotten away, I've seen all of them. Oh, well, not Brandon Ingram, because he started his career there. But I've seen them both photoshopped into Lakers uniforms. So Lakers fans are already, you know, the timer is on for how quickly they could move their draft pick as soon as they can do that, because they're starting to get it back in their control and they can do that on draft night. So that'll be something that's interesting to see how that goes. The other thing I was thinking about with respect to those potential moves is, you know, one, you know, would it be a mistake, you know, for these teams? Are they kind of getting ahead of themselves? Would it be maybe premature to part ways with these guys after things didn't necessarily go well? I mentioned the Cavs, like thinking about how quickly it could all fall apart because Jared Allen, it seems like, you know, there's some overlap, right? There's the Jared Allen, Evan Mobley thing. Is he getting in the way of Evan Mobley's growth? You know, the Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland pairing has not necessarily been maybe it has been what people envision it to be, but maybe it's reached its ceiling and it might be easier to part with one and not the other. And the value you get back can allow you to build a team around those two guys. Because I mentioned last week, I think Evan Garnett, wow, Evan Mobley is poised to make that. I'm buying into his nickname again, but I think he's poised to kind of make that, you know, astronomical leap at some point. And maybe, you know, making the team his team, as soft-spoken as he is, might be the thing that allows him to kind of come out of that shell a little bit. When I think about the Spurs, they're going to be linked to every star. We're going to start seeing players photoshopped in their jerseys the same way we see in Lakers jerseys. When I think about Wemby, realistically, really being the only untouchable on that roster, but like, okay, the value and like how willing, like, would you be willing to part ways with, you know, a Keldon Johnson or a Devin Vassell or a Jeremy Sochan? Like, where does that land and who can net you the most value and maybe net you a star player in return? And then the timeline that they're on and how quick they're ready to try and compete, you know, for playoffs and then even more, because when you have a guy like Victor Wembanyama, you know, it's almost quicker than the Lakers, the Lakers timer for being able to move their picks is how quick their timer is going to be on trying to contend for titles each and every year. So those are the things that kind of come from that, and we'll kind of see how that plays out as the offseason goes on. But it really is intriguing, specifically around those three players. And there's other stuff adjacent to that, like the Pelicans letting Jonas Valanciunas walk and, you know, all of these things as well. But a lot to unfold this offseason.
And another team that I really am curious to see, like, how they move, and I think a lot of it is going to depend on how this season finishes up, but Oklahoma City is still sitting on all of those draft picks. that they're not going to be able to make all of those picks. I think it's something like they have like 13 first round picks in the next 5 years or something like that. I think it's like 19 overall draft picks in the last seven or in the next 7 years. And don't quote me on that because, you know, I didn't come with the research ready on that one, but you know, that's just something that it's a lot. It's still a treasure chest of draft picks, first and second rounders that teams are going to be, you know, at some point the Thunder are going to cash in those picks and get a star that they feel like is the right guy to fit the core that they have right now. And I don't know if that star is going to come available this offseason. I don't think the Thunder are in all that much of a rush to dump those draft picks just because, as we've seen, they're already the number one seed in the West. They've already proven that they can compete with some of the best teams in the Western Conference. They may even go on to represent the West in the NBA Finals for all we know. But you know, it makes me think that eventually at some point they are going to have to offload those picks because they can't make all of those picks. They don't have the roster spots available. So they're going to have to start combining these eventually and go get the player that they want. And, you know, I mean, I think ideally in a perfect world for them, they would have been able to package like 10 first round picks and went and got Victor Wembanyama last year. Or maybe they would try and do the same for whoever ends up with the first overall pick next year and try and go get someone like Cooper Flagg. But it's like, you know, when those types of generational prospects are available, teams aren't, when you win the lottery and you get the number one pick, you're not willing to part ways with that. So I don't think they're really ever going to be able to put that many picks together to get a, say, number one overall pick. So it feels more likely to me that they'll be able to eventually package them together to get a disgruntled star that fits what Oklahoma City is looking for a little bit better. I don't think any of the players that we just mentioned, Trae Young, Donovan Mitchell, or Brandon Ingram, are the types of guys that they could really use. I don't really think Jared Allen is a guy like that. I don't really think that, you know, someone like Zach LaVine is really like that. It almost feels like they need more of like kind of like a defensive minded wing. Like, I'm just going to throw OG Anunoby's name out there because we saw how well he fit in immediately with the Knicks and how well that, or the way that he took them to another level defensively. So to me, it feels like it's probably more of a player like that. I don't know who that next kind of 3-and-D wing star is that is going to become available. But, you know, I am very interested to see if, you know, we get to see OKC cash in any of those picks after having a season that was well ahead of schedule this year.
Yeah, when you were talking through that and like as you got toward the end of it, one player I thought of, and not this specific player, obviously, because he's found a home and it'll probably be his home for the remainder of his career, but an Aaron Gordon-like player and what he was able to do for Denver. And like, you know, hey, he wasn't exactly, and I saw this conversation on Twitter earlier today, so this is why it's fresh on my mind, but, you know, he came into the league, you know, expected to be Blake Griffin 2.0. And when we kind of realized that wasn't in the cards for him, nothing wrong with that. He is a star role player, and the Nuggets aren't the Nuggets without him. So the Thunder finding their version of that player will be really interesting to see how that goes when you're talking about all the picks they have. I'm sure you've seen the picture before. It's like Lil Wayne with like a bunch of money. Like, he doesn't want to throw it. He's like kind of holding it back. I'm thinking about Sam Presti holding all his draft picks and being reluctant to let go of them until he finds exactly what he wants to get in return. But they certainly have a lot of leverage moving forward, especially given how good this team is, how they're ahead of schedule. It affords them a little more of a luxury to take swings and misses too. You know, Gordon Hayward has not necessarily been the impactful player that they envisioned him being during the postseason, but that hasn't kept them from doing what they've done so far. So it'll be interesting to see what the Thunder do. Like I said earlier in the show, you know, they will be a perennial contender, whether it starts this year or starts next year. They're ahead of the curve in where they are because those guys are only getting better.
Yeah, and then, you know, I think when we're talking about teams like Oklahoma City, like, there are plenty of other playoff teams that are going to make adjustments based on what happens this postseason. Like, for as good as the Mavericks were in the playoffs, you know, like I said, those trade deadline moves to bring in guys like PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford, it doesn't always have to be going to get the biggest name, the biggest superstar that's available on the market. You know, you brought up the Aaron Gordon trade. Like, how quickly did that transform Denver from a team that was desperately trying to get over the hump to the most, you know, kind of well-oiled machine dominant team in the NBA for the last two seasons? So, you know, those types of players are out there that are just waiting to be, you know, plucked from their current situation and put into a better role that is suited to their talents and can kind of just buy into a role like that and really take a team to another level. So, you know, it goes beyond Oklahoma City. Like, I think Dallas is a team like that. I think, you know, the Knicks are a team that now that they have this core intact, like, where can they find another player that can, you know, potentially go and elevate them from being a team that is potentially going to the Eastern Conference Finals, could potentially still go to the NBA Finals as well. We're not going to rule that out by any means. But, you know, to get over to the hump into that championship level, your championship caliber team. I'm not saying they're not right now. They clearly are if they've gotten this far. But, you know, those are the types of moves in the margins that make such a big difference and can take a team from, you know, hey, you're going to the Eastern Conference Finals every year. You're going to the Eastern Conference Semifinals every year, Western Conference Finals, whatever it is, and then get you over the hump. Honestly, like in some ways, I feel like Boston found that with Kristaps Porzingis. Now, granted, he's, you know, former All-Star. You know, he's a big name. Don't get me wrong, but you know, he's the type of player who that trade happened and it was like, oh, let's see how this fits in. Let's see how this works out. And then it ended up working out better than anybody could have ever imagined. And that's why they ended up having the best record in the NBA by far this season. So, you know, those types of Aaron Gordon, Kristaps Porzingis, like those moves are out there. OG Anunoby, I'd throw him in that group. Those types of moves are out there. It's just on those teams that got bounced in the first round, maybe bounced in the early second round, that need to go back to the drawing board and say, okay, where can we find the moves or that specific player in the margins who can elevate our team to championship contender status?
Yeah, and for Minnesota, it's the Mike Conley move and then the Nickeil Alexander-Walker move that they wouldn't be where they are right now, which even though it's the brink of elimination at this point, that they made such big differences, you know, in that first round series against Phoenix. And, you know, they're part of the fabric of what that team is and what they're doing moving forward. As we wrap up here, we will kick it to a few shout outs and then send it on home. I will start. I talked about the W expansion. We mentioned this on the show a little while back, and apparently we just weren't in the know. Asia Wilson, of course he has a shoot.com. Great brand rollout from Nike. They kept it under wraps for a while. Despite the outrage from everybody in the basketball world, Asia Wilson and Nike have been cooking up a signature shoe that's coming out in 2025. So we'll have the Sabrinas in Valkyrie colors, the Caitlin Clark sneaker, and Asia Wilson's sneaker with Nike next season. I still haven't got a chance to play in Sabrina's kicks, so maybe I'll try one of those three out. But you know, if the A1 comes out when I'm still in the market for new basketball kicks, those will be the one that I opt for. I think that my game at this point requires a little more support because I'm operating on the block. But shout out to her. She had 30 points, 13 boards, 5 assists, and 3 blocks in her opener. So that's a hell of a encore for the 2-time defending champs and the 2-time finals MVP.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody has gone to, of course, she has a shoe.com. I immediately checked it out to see if Nike had the race covered there. And of course they did. And the, you know, kind of like message that they have there was so cold. I thought it was so cool. I just pulled it up as you were talking. It says, you thought we'd sleep on an SEC champion, national champion, number one pick, 5-time All-Star, U.S. Olympic gold winner, WNBA finals MVP, a statue having New York Times bestseller, Times 100, most influential people in 2024, 2-time WNBA champion, 2-time defensive player of the year, 2-time WNBA MVP, and the pettiest hooper on the internet. You thought, of course, Asia has a shoe. And I was like, damn, that is one of the coolest marketing rollouts I've ever seen for a basketball sneaker. So shout out to Nike for having their bases covered there. And you know, you brought up the Sabrina 2s, but I know they're basically like a carbon copy of the Kobe 12s, which I had a pair of myself and I love those shoes. But I'm not complaining about any shoe that is like a Kobe Bryant silhouette, because those are, I mean, you and I could go on and on about how we feel about Kobe's basketball sneakers. So I'm loving what they're doing in the WNBA space with, you know, these signature shoes. I'm very curious to see how Nike juggles having 2-star WNBA athletes who are going to want Kobe like silhouettes as their sig shoe, because Caitlin Clark is going to be the same way. I'm sure she is going to want 100%. To have a shoe that is very similar to Kobe's. And then they're also dealing with that with Devin Booker on the men's side. But, you know, so Nike's team's going to have to get real creative how they're going to differentiate these from the greatest basketball shoes of all time, in my opinion. But my shout out, and this isn't a done deal yet, but I want to give it a shout out just in case the news does break before we record next. My shout out is to Inside the NBA, because it sounds like NBC is going to be winning the bidding rights for the third television deal in the next NBA TV deal. Right now it's ESPN, reportedly ESPN and Amazon, or Disney, I should say, Disney and Amazon, who have won the first 2 rights to the TV deal. It sounds like NBA on NBC is going to be making a comeback. Gil and I are a little bit too young to really kind of live through the NBA on NBC era. So I'm sure for a lot of people, that's nostalgic in a good way. And I'm not saying it's not nostalgic in a good way for me, but growing up with Inside the NBA and still to this day, watching Inside the NBA all the way through at the end of every, you know, night game, and just seeing like just the random stuff they come up with to get you entertained, and the way that those guys go back and forth, it really does feel like there is going to be like a hole in my heart when that show goes away. if that show goes away. I really do kind of hope that they find a way to keep that show alive. I don't know if there's any way in the contract negotiations that they could do a split or anything like that. But, you know, it's just to me, like, I see a lot of the conversation on Twitter about that show. And there's a big contingent of people that are like, oh, it's not the most informative basketball show. These guys don't even know what they're talking about. This, that, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, every once in a while, I think people need to like stop taking themselves so seriously. And like, not everything has to be so serious. And it doesn't have to be this like in-depth basketball show that's giving you the X's and the O's and in advanced analytics and all this stuff. Like, you have to realize sometimes, like, step away from like the NBA Twitter world and realize that like there is a massive fan base of people who are just casual NBA fans who love that stuff. And as someone, like, I think you and I are both very similar in the sense that, like, yeah, you know, we can get into the nitty gritty and talk the nitty gritty when it comes to basketball, but we also just love the NBA for the greatest reality show on television as it is. And Inside the NBA does a great job of complementing the NBA in that way. And, you know, they do a good job of adding the perspective of Hall of Famers in guys who have, you know, guys like Kenny the Jet Smith, who have won NBA championships and have been on, you know, a key part of championship teams. They add that perspective. And yeah, maybe they're hating a little bit on the new generation, but like, what old head isn't doing that? You and I are already starting to do that. We're only 30 years old. Like, you know, it comes in due time, but you know, this is a long winded way of saying that like Inside the NBA is perfect, and it's perfect for the product of the NBA. And it's going to be really, really sad when it's taken, if it's taken away from us, because I know you, me, and a lot of other NBA fans like really associate that show with the NBA season, the NBA playoffs, all the way through to the conference finals every year. So shout out to Inside the NBA.
Yeah, you know, we get Round Ball Rock back, but at what cost? You know, it's funny you said that. You mentioned, you know, us being a little too young to enjoy NBA and NBC, and I started thinking about it. I was like, you know, like, I hear the song in my head, and I can think about like the overlays and some of the games that I watched. And again, at a really young age, you know, the Lakers Sixers finals, or like, you know, the Lakers Kings conference finals and rivalry in the late 90s, early 2000s. But that's such a small part, you know, like for every, you know, two or three of those memories, I have, you know, five or 10 Chuck rants and arguments with Shaq that probably go a little overboard, and, you know, talking about filling your gas tank up or getting a brace for somebody in the steam room. Like, all the things that they've done, the memories and the things that they've given us are countless. You know, yesterday, Tuesday's games, I read online that Charles Barkley and Shaq weren't present on the studio because they were out in New York making a last ditch effort and a last pitch to try and get Inside the NBA, keep it alive. I know the NBA prefers to only have three broadcast partners, but they could go with four. So I guess in a perfect world, we get Round Ball Rock and Inside the NBA. We're not asking for too much. We're not too greedy. So maybe we'll see. We'll see how that goes. And we will keep you updated with that, because that will certainly impact the way that we consume the NBA. Coming up next week, all defense and all NBA teams, I think all rookie teams as well. So we will react to that if we record after that. If we record before, we'll make some predictions and see how that goes. But again, thanks for tuning in to NBA Sound System. Make sure to please subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and also share it with a friend. For Kyle Irving, my name is Gil McGregor. We will be back next week to continue into the conference finals in the Eastern and Western Conferences. See you then.